When I was growing up, I was always told that I was too much to handle. I was too loud, too opinionated, too demanding, just plain too much. Now, as an adult, I celebrate these qualities within myself and within the women I know. This is a call to action. This is a space to own your too muchness. This is too much to handle. Cranston here, and today I am sitting down with Erin Cummings. She's an actress and a writer and the host of the new podcast, Kepa Kepa Cancer, where she gives listeners the real deal when it comes to cancer treatment. Now, in this episode, we are obviously talking about cancer, but also how you, no matter your circumstance or what you're currently going through, cancer or not, can find humor in the shittiest of times and actually pull yourself out of those really, really dark times that we all go through. And I think she's the perfect person to talk about this and so, so much more. But before we get to that, I want to give a shout out to the reviewer of the week, Coco Champetre. And she says, I am kind of in love with this new podcast. I can so relate. Let me try that again. I am kind of in love with this new podcast. I can relate so much to being told I'm quote unquote too much. This podcast helps me feel confident in my big personality and makes it easier to navigate life as a woman in my 20s. Whew, I could not ask for more and for a better takeaway from this podcast. Thank you so, so much to leaving that review. And all, for all of you listening, if you leave a review, I'll be giving a shout out every single week. And reviews are life to those in the podcast world. So I so, so appreciate you taking the time to do that. And someone else who I'm guessing has been told she's a little too much at some point in her life is Erin Cummings. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Hannah. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you and your pup.
And my little puppy, Joey Bishop, the fourth member and the often forgotten member of the Rat Pack.
She's so cute.
She is a little adorable.
She is very, very cute. And she doesn't very bark. Well behave.
Yeah, she doesn't bark. She doesn't sniff crotches. There's not a lot of licking going on. She's basically like a cat who follows directions, which is why I love her, because I'm a cat person. Yeah. But I apparently now am a dog person.
I mean, you can be both.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also, I'm going to repeat what I said when we were off air, which is thank you so much for inspiring the theme music for Kappa Kappa Cancer.
Aww.
Because I had some music that I wasn't thrilled about before we got started. And then when I was asking the guys in the studio, like, hey, and Hazel in the studio, shout out to Hazel. Hey, like, are there any other badass podcasters that come in here? I'd love to meet some. They played me the opening for your show, which I have now been listening to obsessively. And I went, oh my God, living in a I love it. I love it. I sing along with it every time in my car. I am that girl at the stoplight. It pumps me up and it gets me so ready. And what I love about your show that I haven't told you is I think it's so great how you will talk about something, but then you also back it up with real evidence. I kind of just tend to blather on, like 98% of pizzas have pepperoni on them. I have no idea what I'm talking about, you know, which is why I'm always like, check with your doctor. I don't know what I'm saying, but I love how you make it so approachable. You make it so personal and relatable to everyone, no matter what you're talking about. But then you also have these hardcore facts to back it up. And I think that that's not only a really smart way of doing things, because you legitimize everything that you're saying, but also it empowers other people to back up what they're saying. You know, we live in a time where people are constantly just, you know, pulling shit out of
their ass.
There's
a lot of alternative facts.
Exactly. So I really value and appreciate your facts and your fact-checking facts.
Well, thank you. I value and appreciate you saying that. And I want to get into Kappa Kappa Cancer.
Let's get into it.
But first, I actually want to read your bio. I know that's really weird. And normally I would ask like somebody to like, oh, give me your background. But I want to read your bio because I think it is so freaking funny. But also it's still talking about something like super serious. So I think this is like a good sort of intro for you.
Great.
So it says, Erin Cummings is a Los Angeles-based actress and writer. Her fairy tale courtship and subsequent marriage to her best friend, the third actor to play Joey Buchanan on One Life to Live, faced an early setback. 2 months after their wedding, just as they were feverishly and actively trying to make a baby in every room of their home, Cummings was diagnosed with breast cancer. Her once thriving career came to a grinding to a halt, as did her sex life with her new husband, which she ugly cried about to a local Catholic priest, much to her mother's horror. Throughout her treatment, Erin relied on humor and oversharing on social media as ways of processing her diagnosed PTSD and depression. Whew.
Yes.
What a, like, it's very funny, but it's not. Like, I feel bad for laughing, but the way you present it is very funny.
Yes, I want you to laugh. And I actually, I said to my husband, are you okay if I refer to you as the third actor to play Joey Buchanan? And he goes, I don't know if I was the third. And I go, well, the number three is funny, so we're just going to keep it. There's like 30 people that have played Joey Buchanan. So, yeah, my husband, Tom Degnan, is also an actor. Mm. And what I don't have on there, we talk about it, but we don't like, I don't know, we sort of pick and choose when we talk about it. My husband was also diagnosed with cancer at the same time that I was, but his was a very rare blood cancer. In fact, his doctor uses it as a case study at UCLA for his students because it's so weird. Essentially, his blood was attacking his kidneys, causing him to be in stage 3 chronic kidney disease, and he had a 50% chance of going on dialysis. So I was getting chemo infusions every 3 weeks. He was getting chemo injections once a week. And we were in our first year of marriage. I had a dry vagina. He had no sex drive. We were just like, okay, let's do this.
Wow. So yeah. You were diagnosed at the same time?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. He had been sick in New York, but they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And then, so 2016 started, we were both on TV shows. He was on a show called, Limitless on CBS. Mm-hmm. I was on a new AMC show that was doing really well. We were in New York planning our wedding, like just living the dream, trying to pick out a house in Connecticut we were going to buy the next year. And then we came back from our honeymoon. Both of our shows were diagnosed. Both of our shows were canceled. Mm. I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And then I said, listen, we don't even know what the fuck you have. You got to go to see a doctor too. And then that's when he was diagnosed. So that was our first year of marriage.
Wow. Yeah. So what was your sort of like initial response? I mean, that's a lot to have at one time. Just one of those can throw you into a bout of depression. What was your sort of like initial reaction to that?
I laughed. I know that it sounds crazy because nobody, everybody's like, you know, you see it on television. People like they go into the doctor's office and then the doctor says, I'm so sorry to tell you, but you have cancer. Mm-hmm. And first of all, when they say you have cancer, it's like, well, what kind of, there's so many kinds of cancer. Right. We look at cancer as one big disease, but it's actually 100 different diseases or more. You know, brain cancer is not the same as breast cancer. And even within breast cancer, there's multiple kinds. But the reason why I laughed was because Joey's shaking, sorry. Let me start, rewind a little bit. I felt no lump. There was nothing in there. Mm. I wasn't even 40, so it wasn't time for me to get a mammogram. I felt a weird boob headache, like this dull, numb pain that just kind of kept coming on and then it would go away just like a headache does.
Yeah.
So it wasn't debilitating pain and it didn't last all, it wasn't all the time. It wasn't sharp and shooting where I couldn't breathe. It just would come on. And
was it like sometimes before your period, you get sore breasts or something like that? Was it similar to that?
Kind of like that, but it would happen when I wasn't on my period. It would happen when I wasn't PMSing. It would just happen at random times. And I happened to mention it to my gynecologist, Dr. Catherine DeUgarte. I have to shout her out because she saved my life. And she said, oh, well, you should get a mammogram. I don't need a mammogram. I'm not 40. I'm too young. I don't have a history of it in my family. She said, I don't really believe in any of that stuff. I believe if you feel like there's something wrong and it keeps nagging at you, you should get something, you should get it taken care of. So, but again, I didn't think that there was anything wrong at that point. So I went to New York, I did my show, I got married, I had my honeymoon. I came back from the honeymoon. And at that point, it was like someone was knocking at the door. Like, hello, I still didn't feel a lump, but I figured, you know what? I'm 39 now. I mean, I am a little bit older than the target demographic of your show, but that's okay. I don't look like it.
You're so welcome. I'll do not. That is true. God bless you.
As long as you never look at
your secrets after the show.
So I was like, sure, let me just go ahead and get that mammogram, you know, get a baseline. So then, the mammogram, they needed to do an ultrasound, which is a little bit easier to see. And they said, you know, there's a concerning mass. Mm. And I was like, what's a concerning mass? And they said, well, we don't know. It could be a cyst. It could be. And I said, well, is it a Cheerio? Like, what the fuck is it? I mean, I'm making jokes. I'm not taking this seriously at all. And then they said, we need to do a biopsy. So at that point, I started asking a couple women that I knew that had some history of breast cancer in their family or an experience with it themselves. And they were all so dismissive of it. Nobody said, you know what? You have every right to be scared. And worst case scenario, I will be there for you, but I really hope it's nothing. They all were so dismissive, like, oh, please, I've had 10 biopsies and they're all fine. And it's, you know, 70% of biopsies turn out to be normal. They were so, again, dismissive of my very real fears and concerns that when I actually heard the news of, no, it's cancer, in a totally fucked up way, I was like, I knew I was right. See, fuck those bitches. They didn't know what they were talking about. You know, and that's the thing. And I've actually had this conversation with other women who have had breast cancer. And they say, you know what? In a weird way, I was almost happy when I was told that I had breast cancer because so many people were so like, oh, you'll be fine. Oh, it's nothing. Oh, it's not a big deal. And in the world of any kind of medical issue or any kind of issue, people always are so dismissive of very real concerns of women.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was just reading an article yesterday from the New Yorker magazine that referenced an NPR podcast that I heard months ago about how much more likely Black women are to die during childbirth than white women because their concerns are just not taken as seriously.
Yeah.
That a college educated Black woman has a higher rate, a higher chance of dying in childbirth than a white woman with a high school degree.
Well, think about Serena Williams. Even
exactly.
She had complications that during her pregnancy because doctors don't take women's concerns as seriously and especially Black women's concerns as seriously. And because of that, a lot of times you're right. Like they are sort of dismissed.
I saw it happen with a girlfriend of mine 2 weeks ago. She was rushed into an emergency C-section. She's Black. And they were numbing her. And she kept telling, by the way, she is a pediatric surgeon. She's a doctor. Like she knows her way around a medical facility and her husband is an ER doctor. So he's in the room as well. And she was saying, I can feel that on my left side. And they said, oh no, you probably feel some pressure. They started cutting her. She said, I feel the scalpel right there.
Wow.
Yes. I mean like, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
So that going along those lines, when someone's very rational, real fears, no matter whether it's involving in cancer or pregnancy or whatever, are dismissed, there's almost something validating about being like, no, see, I was right. So when I got the news, when Dr. Deugarte called me and said, I really wish I had better news, but unfortunately you have breast cancer, I actually started laughing. And I also was really arrogant about it. I kind of had this attitude of, I'm Erin Cummings. Like, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to have to go through chemo. I'm not going to lose my hair. I'm just going to be like, boom. And then I'm going to, you know, wear a pink t-shirt and run a marathon and I'll be great. And so the next day when I was in my surgeon's office and she said, you know, she brought up, she said, blah, 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 chemo. I legitimately said to her, now, when you say chemo, you mean you're going to give my boob like an injection of chemo and then like, yay, I'm a survivor. And she kind of looked at Tom and she says, no, you're going to have to sit in the chemo ward like every 3 weeks and get an infusion. And I immediately started bawling, crying and said, I can't sit with all those dying people. I don't want to. And because that's a really scary thing. you imagine the chemo ward. I mean, just the term chemo ward sounds so awful. And it's not like Sex in the City. You can only have one guest at a time unless you're Erin Cummings and you go, no, I'm having two guests. And my mom will be here and so will my husband. I need another chair and a pillow and get me some tea. Can I order some quinoa salad? Do you guys deliver? They do actually do deliver in chemo. It's kind of like flying first class. It's pretty fun. It's pretty nice. Like gorgeous views. They have like a coffee machine.
Yeah. Wow.
There's a little refrigerator that says patients only. And I'm like, ha ha, that's me. but it was really scary. And then I came home and I said to Tom, you know, I think this is a much bigger deal than I thought it was going to be. Mm. And what I allowed myself to have were moments of being totally, I don't want to get out of bed, depressed, you know, screw the world. I hate everyone. I want to die. Let me buy a one-way ticket to Mexico and just drink myself to death with margaritas on the beach. And then, and Tom would go, okay, all right, we'll buy a ticket to Mexico tomorrow. How about that? And then we'll go to Mexico and you don't have to do chemo and you can die. And I'd be like, great. And it gave me some sense of power over the situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? I don't have to do chemo. If I want to die, I can just die. And I'm okay with that. And then I'd go to bed and the next day I'd wake up and I go, you know what? Today, I'm not going to Mexico. Today, I'm going to live. I'm going to fight. I'm going to do this. And I think that's where the fight comes in. Because really, like, I didn't beat chemo. The doctors beat chemo. Chemo beat chemo. All the women who selflessly gave their lives to be in clinical trials to find the right medication, the right cocktail for this particular type of breast cancer, those women fought. I just put one foot in front of the other and I did what I was told. But the real fight comes in of actually making the decision to do what you're told, to actually go, I don't want to do chemo, but I know that it's going to save my life. So I'm going to, I don't want to lose my hair or, you know, you can do cold caps. So you don't have to lose your hair. I don't want to, I don't want to go through the pain. I don't want to have surgery. I don't want to lose my breasts. I don't want to do radiation every day. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. But it's going, you know what? I know I don't want to, but I'm going to anyway. That's where the fight comes in. And we found humor by, actually it was that first day when we were on our way to the surgeon's office. We have a cat, one of our Rat Pack members, Frankie. He was crying at the door to go outside. And Tom and I were so somber, like, oh my God, I can't believe that we're actually doing this. And he goes to open the door and Frankie is just like, like crying, and Tom spins around, points his finger at the cat and goes, what the hell are you complaining about? You're not the one with breast cancer. And just like screams at the cat. And I looked at him and I just started hysterically laughing.
Yeah.
Just the ridiculousness of his frustration coming out on the cat.
Yeah.
And then that night we went to Cafe Gratitude, which I'm sure you've been to.
Yeah.
Everyone, it's this,
it's like beyond expensive vegan hotspot in LA.
It's like the best and the worst at the same time.
The food is amazing, but they make you like order things. You have to be like, I am grateful. And that's like a rice bowl.
And it's like a smoothie of some sort. And I remember one time, and they take forever because everything has to be like,
I always order the I am hearty, which I don't know what that means. I am hearty.
I think it's a bowl and I've had it and it's delicious.
It is, but I'm like, I don't want to say I'm hearty.
Oh no. And they always go, today's the question of the day is, and so we went there and we had this, you had a couple people at dinner with us and they, and the woman said, today's question is, what is your superpower? What is your, because you know, they talk that because they are so starving that they because they haven't
but
eaten
also
anything.
I love Cafe Gratitude. So if you want to sponsor me.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, we
love
to
give us a discount on the food. We will happily take
100%.
That. We love you.
So she goes, what is your superpower? And without missing a beat, Tom, because I looked at him and I said, what do you think my superpower would be? And without missing a beat, he goes, well, it's not having cancer. And the entire table just froze. Like, you are not allowed to say that. And I just sort of crying and laughter. And it was stuff like that, you know, it was stuff like that, that really allowed us, because finally, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm allowed to laugh at cancer. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to make a joke about that because I'm in the middle of it right now. So I feel like I can make that joke when I'm doing it at my own expense.
Yeah.
Never at someone else's expense.
Right.
You know, like if I were sitting with someone who has cancer, I would not make a joke to them unless I knew that they, you know, and I also, you know, you learn what's appropriate and what's not. And if you've never gone through, like, and also, even though I can have a great sense of humor about it, if you have not gone through cancer, I'm not okay with you making a joke at my expense.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, totally.
Yeah. It's like, when people say, oh, well, it's okay for me to make, misogynistic jokes or racist jokes or anti-Semitic jokes because I make fun of everybody.
No,
you can make fun of yourself, but you don't get to make fun of the rest of the people. So, the first episode of Kappa Kappa Cancer is actually called Stupid Shit People Say When You Have Cancer.
And what are some examples? I'm sure people are curious.
Yeah. The first thing is goes along with the dismissive quality, which is, oh, you'll be fine. I know someone that had breast cancer and she's fine. And it's kind of like the way that I compare it is if I called you and was like, hey, Hannah, how's it going? What are you doing? And you went, oh, Erna, I have the flu. And if I said, oh, you know what? I know someone that had the flu once and they're fine. You'll be fine. You'd be like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. I have the flu. I feel like crap. I don't want to get up. And no, I don't even feel like talking to you.
Right.
And I would sound like an insensitive asshole for saying you'll be fine. Yet for some reason, when someone says I have cancer, mm-hmm. which is infinitely worse than the flu.
Yes.
Like I've never had the flu, but I've heard it's pretty
You've
bad.
You've never had the
I've
flu?
I've never had the flu. I'm the healthiest person I know except for cancer. I've never had the flu.
Wow.
I broke one bone in my life at a Madonna concert. I was so
it's
drunk.
A great place
I
couldn't yes, break a bone.
Exactly. And I healed very quickly. My doctor said that I was like a superhero. So that is my superpower. Broken bones can heal very quickly.
But I actually think that's really interesting because I think people are trying to I never think people are saying things in malice. And
no,
I try to always hope that people are coming from a good place. Hope is the operative word
there.
But I do think that it's interesting to point that out, that while people may think that they are being empowering by saying, you're going to be okay, you know, that can feel very dismissive for somebody who is in pain or scared or, you know, struggling with whatever it may be.
Right. Well, also, it's actually, and here's what, I know that everybody has good intentions.
Yes.
And my dad actually got on to me because I posted this rant while I was going through chemo. And it was like, these are all the stupid things that people say. And that's what inspired that episode of the podcast. My dad said, people mean well, they're mm-hmm. just trying to be supportive. And I said, I know they are. And I appreciate that. And you know what? When my friend, Andy Whitfield, who played Spartacus on the show Spartacus, mm-hmm. and that's how we knew each other. I played his wife. When he had cancer, I said all the same stupid things. I said, you're going to be fine. I said, you're a fighter. I said, no one's stronger than you. You're going to beat this, blah, blah, blah. You got this. I said all of those things. And he died. I had no idea what I was talking about.
Right.
So unless you are a doctor, and unless you are that person's doctor and you know what is actually going on, you don't actually know that they're going to be okay. And to say you're going to be okay is not only dismissive of their fears, it's dismissive of the reality that they actually might not be okay.
Yeah.
And it kind of like closes the door really quick without allowing that person to just be in that mm-hmm. moment. So instead of saying, you know what, you're going to be fine. I know somebody has, because also when you say to someone, I know someone who had cancer and they're fine now, but what about me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm standing right in front of you and I'm not fine right now. Right now I'm scared. Right now I'm in pain. And also, what does fine even mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like eventually the book that I write will be called Don't Tell Your Friends I'm Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at me, you would never know that I had cancer.
Right.
You would never know that I am still on antidepressant medication. You would never know that I still suffer bouts of PTSD. You would never know that, you know, that I had a suicide attempt. You would never know that I still sometimes am suicidal because of this massive trauma that I've experienced. You would never know about my infertility issues that I'm still struggling with because of this. Like, you wouldn't know that just by looking at me. And so to say that I'm fine is not actually true. Yes, I'm alive. Yes, I'm quote, healthy. Yes, I feel like a fucking warrior. I have it tattooed on my arm. But fine is a really relative term. And so what I would love for people to say instead is, wow, I am so sorry. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah.
How are you doing right now? What is the best way that I can support you right now emotionally? Because also, just like with pregnancy or with a loss or with any kind of health issue, it changes day to day. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember one time I was in my dentist's office and I was like super happy-go-lucky to the receptionist. And then by the time I got back to the dentist, I was crying. And she was like, why are you so friendly with them? And then I get all the tears and I wanted to hit her. Yeah. I love my dentist, but I was like, bitch, I will fucking murder you right now. I will drill a hole in your face. I still don't know if my medication is like properly, like, I don't know if I'm at the proper levels yet. So, the biggest thing is just don't be dismissive. All you have to do is say, you know, I want to be here for you. And also, a lot of people say, let me know what you need. Well, you don't know what you need. Again, it changes day by day. And I had people send me food that I was never going to eat. Mm-hmm. I had people send me boxes of cupcakes. And I'm like, don't you know that sugar is cancer food? Which some people believe that, some people don't, whatever. I'm not going to get into that debate.
Yeah.
But like, don't send people cupcakes.
Right.
You know, like.
But I think you make a really good point, because I think that the best way to deal with so many problems that other people deal with is to ask questions, right? And I think people are sometimes really scared to ask a question.
Totally.
But I think there's, if you ask it in a way that seems thoughtful and intentional,
yes,
I think that can often be the best way to deal with something, because you're right. Like, some people love platitudes and some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people love dealing with things with humor, and some people want you to sit there and cry with them. But if you're making assumptions about what somebody may need or want, you're probably going to go down the wrong path.
Right.
Whereas asking them, then you have a lot more information and then can make a decision based off that. And likewise, asking yourself, mm-hmm. because sometimes you don't know.
Yeah.
What would feel like totally, you know, unrelated, but sometimes when I'm really upset, my boyfriend like doesn't know how to deal with it.
Right.
And he'll be like,
and
well,
men are fixers by their nature.
Yes, they are. And he'll be like, well, what can I do? And then I'm like, oh wait, shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I got to ask myself and figure out what I need in that moment. So asking ourselves what we need too. Sometimes that's humor. Sometimes that's to cry in a ball in the shower floor. You know what I mean? And it, like you said, changes every day.
Yeah. And I think also, as the person on the receiving end of that, it is so beautiful if you can give the gift of education to someone. Mm. And we're so afraid of doing that because, like, heaven forbid the girl with cancer be rude, you know? And so I started telling people, I really appreciate that you're trying to make me feel better, but that actually isn't helpful. And then people stop and they go, oh, and I would say, I really know, I know that you're trying to help me and I appreciate that. What would be helpful right now is if we don't talk about cancer. What would be helpful right now is if you actually ask me how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. What would be helpful right now is if you, you know, if we put on some Netflix and we laugh at something funny, or if I can just bitch for 5 minutes about the things that are really making me mad, you know?
Because there's a big difference too between intent and impact.
Right.
Right. Like, you may have the best of intentions, but the impact may be totally different. And so you have to be aware of how what you're saying, what you're doing is impacting the other person. And then you can change accordingly, I think, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And then also, you know, along the spiritual lines, that's a real, there were so many people that were like, you know what? You just put it in God's hands and he will carry you through. And I was like, first of all, we don't know what she would do. Second of all,
tell him,
if I just need to put it in God's hands, why am I going through treatment? I'm going to go to Mexico and have that margarita and God's going to handle it. If you don't know what someone's spirituality is, it's a really dangerous path to to instruct them on your own, you know, your own beliefs. I really enjoy it when someone says to me, I am a big believer in God. Mm. And would you mind if I prayed for you? I'm like, girl, sing it. Yes. I would love for you to pray for me because you know what? It can't hurt. Do I want to get down on the floor right now in the doctor's office and hold your hand and pray with you, which is what a nurse actually asked me to do with her. And because I had not found my voice yet, I did. And I was literally on my knees being like, this is Looney Tunes. Right. And I am so upset right now that yeah. she's making me do this. Not because I have a problem with prayer, but like when I'm in a hospital gown, I don't need to be on my knees in an office. It was just totally inappropriate. So yeah, a lot of, there's just a lot of assumptions that are made. And then also when people would say you're going to get through this, what people didn't know is that a lot of people don't die from the cancer who have cancer. They die from all sorts of other things.
Yeah.
Infections, for mm-hmm. example. And even though I was super careful and I didn't eat sushi, which was very annoying, Dr. Deugarte, actually, when she found out that I couldn't have sushi, she, it was like the, like a couple days before chemo, we were on the phone and she goes, you can't have sushi? That's the worst thing I've ever heard about cancer. I don't know, I might be paraphrasing, but she goes, where are you right now? And I said, I'm in Beverly Hills. And she goes, good. I want you to get to Sugarfish on San Vicente in 20 minutes. I will meet you there. I'm buying you dinner. And she and her family bought me Sugarfish as my final sushi meal. Yeah.
That's so nice.
It was like beautiful.
Yeah.
But even though I was really careful about not doing things that would lead to infections, yeah. like I still can't go to salad bars. I still sing happy birthday when I wash my hands. That's the trick, by the way, for proper hand washing.
That's a good one. I've heard the alphabet. You can just sing any song, I think.
Pretty
really.
Much. Yeah. Like, you know, Bootylicious, whatever. Whatever gets you moving and washing your hands.
Flawless. You'll be there in for like 7 minutes.
So, I got an intestinal infection called C. diff, which basically means that you shit yourself to death. Mm-hmm. And I did lose 15 pounds, which was amazing.
We're not recommending to get C. diff as a diet regimen. Just want to make sure that's clear.
I couldn't eat anything. I was like passing out. I had no energy to like walk across the room, but I would take all my clothes off and I'd look in the mirror and I'd go, Tom, look how sexy I look. Like, I mean, I'm not advocating for that. It was terrible, actually. Well, because normally, because when I, and this is the thing, I am a big believer in what you ask for, you will receive.
Me too.
Everyone is so powerful that they need to understand their power and understand that what you ask for, you will get. So you have to be very specific. I said, I was carrying some extra weight that just was not right for my body.
Yeah.
I am a naturally more curvaceous figure. I've never been like the tiny lift, like the Natalie Portman size, which she has a beautiful body. I've just never been that size. And so I know what's right for my body. And I knew that I was carrying around an extra like 10 to 15 pounds. I was like, this just isn't the right size for me. Mm-hmm. So I had said to the universe, hey, I'd like an opportunity to lose like 10 to 15 pounds. What I meant was I would like to be cast as a superhero. I would like to be in an X-Men movie. I would like to be, you know, one of the Avengers. That's what I meant to say.
Yeah.
But the universe was like, oh, you want to lose 10 to 15 pounds. So then I got cancer and I got C. diff and I lost the weight, but I was like, that's not what I meant. So now I'm much more specific in my asking.
Yeah. You have to be. When you talk to the universe, you need to be specific because the universe will deliver.
100%.
Let me tell you, the universe will deliver and you need to be so specific because in one way or another, they're going to deliver. And sometimes, like you're mentioning, it's not in the way that you want.
Right, exactly. And so, you know what else happens when you have chemo? You get chemo brain and you totally lose your train of thought, which just happened. What were we talking about?
We were talking about right when you got C. diff.
Oh, yes. Thank you. So, with C. diff, you go to the bathroom a lot.
Yeah.
And we live in the Larchmont Village area, which for all of listeners all over the world, Larchmont Village is like the cutest little area. It's like this street that has lots of cafes and shops. And we live about maybe a 10-minute walk. And our daily walks were really important just because I was like, I'm not going to the gym. And so we would have lunch at at like one of the little cafes, and I would go to the bathroom and I'd have like a little, like barely a little nugget of poop. It would be like the nothingest poop ever.
The worst.
And, oh, it'd be the worst. Cause I'd be like, oh my God, this is going to be a big one. And then it would just be like, boop, that's all you're going to get. Boop, just a little nugget. And so then, and it wouldn't even be a nugget. It would be like a flake because like heaven forbid they'd be solid. And so then I'd be walking home and then all of a sudden I would have the look, and Tom knew the look, like it's the, oh my God, I'm about to shit my pants. Look, I got to find a bathroom right now. And he'd go, okay, duck walk, where you tuck your butt under and you squeeze your hips. You like, you squeeze your butt cheeks together and
I'm
you
familiar.
Put your feet in second position and you just kind of like shuffle along. Cause here's an, because people would always say, well, how's your nausea? Are you vomiting all the time? I never vomited once. And I wish I did, because if someone sees a bald girl like vomiting in the gutter, they can assume, oh my God, that poor woman is going through cancer treatment. But if they see some random chick just taking a shit on their lawn, like they don't know that I have cancer. They don't know that I'm sick. They just know that somebody's taking a shit on their lawn. And I can't just go up to random people. There was my friend, Lindsay Margolis. I called her one time and because I was on my way home from somewhere and I had timed it. I was like, okay, I'm going to take a shit right now. And then it's like a 10 minute drive home. I'm going to make it. And all of a sudden, 5 minutes in, boop, I got to go. And I know it's literally going to be like a nugget or a flake nugget. And I'm like, but I don't want a flake nugget in my pants.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a thong. Like that's not going to be pretty. So like if, like, I just can't do it. And I'm not going to wear a diaper because I like wear skinny jeans.
Yeah.
So, and I never looked better in my skinny jeans than when I had C. diff. Let me tell you. Again, not advocating.
Not an endorsement.
Not an endorsement for C. diff at all. You can totally edit out all of my parts about this. This is the kind of jacked up humor that I used to get through cancer. But I called Lindsay and I go, Lindsay, I need you. 911. I know your house is on my way home and I'm about to shit my pants right now. And she goes, I'm not home. Here's where the spare key is. She told me where her spare key is. And I like ran into her house and then I, you know, did my business. And then I called her back and I said, Lindsay, you have just elevated yourself above so many people. Like one of the things you can offer someone is if you know that you live like within a 2 or 5 mile radius of their house, you can say, hey, I'm going to tell you where my spare key is. If you ever need to throw up or you're going to shit your pants, you can stop by my house and you can shit in my toilet.
Yeah.
Like I would offer that to someone. That was a lifesaver. Lindsay Margolis, you saved the day.
Yeah, dang.
And my panties.
No, but I mean, I love that you bring so much humor into this and like find the humor. Cause like for some people that's not how they cope, but for so many people, like you can, sometimes you may not even realize that that is a great coping mechanism. And, and I think sometimes it's dismissed as being flippant about something.
Right.
But I don't like, I deal with most things with humor. I've never like obviously gone through what you're going through, but I was in I've ever talked about this actually, but I was told I had cancer in a doctor's office. I ended up not having it, but they like had the whole discussion, like that whole meeting and everything. And instantly I started making jokes. Like same thing.
Exactly.
Whereas if it was my sister or my mom, like knock on wood, God forbid, or something like that, like I would be crying on the floor. But when it's yourself, sometimes it's a little bit like easier to start making those kinds of jokes. Whereas if my mom, if I was crying and my mom was like, you know, that would have been a different situation as well. But I do think that for so many people, whatever they're dealing with, that finding the humor in it, finding like, oh shit, when it rains, it pours, like finding that funny, like you talk about, you know, when you got back from your honeymoon and having that series of unfortunate events, I think can be really crucial because I think oftentimes we take life so seriously. And there is enough things in life that are so serious and so grave.
Yes.
That if you're not able to find the humor in it, you're going to be, you know, crying all the time. And that's,
absolutely.
And if you're crying all the time, you are not going to have the willpower to get up and do what you're told. You're not going to have the willpower to quote unquote, be a fighter. You're not going to have the willpower to have control over your life and making decisions that are right for you. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to like laugh at the ridiculous and awful things that are happening to mm-hmm. you. Otherwise, like it's all for naught, right. you know?
And that's the thing is that, you know, it's like, I never, in finding the humor, it's about finding that balance of going, you know what, I'm going to allow myself to cry today. And I'm mm-hmm. going to allow myself to not get out of bed. And I'm going to allow myself to not return any phone calls or not write any thank you notes right. for the care packages
yes.
or whatever. But I'm also going to go, what's actually really ridiculous about this? And I'm going to find someone that I feel safe with. You know, I was really lucky that I ended up making friends with other young women who had cancer, breast cancer specifically. And we would go to lunch and we would start sharing stories. And that was also how the humor came to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because we would go into the bathroom and have show and feel because we were all at various stages of our treatment. So my friend Suzanne, who's on a recent episode, she'd already had her double mastectomy. And so Kay and I, who hadn't had surgery yet, were looking at her boobs and looking at her scars and feeling them to see, you know, what they felt like and what they look like. And then I remember one time months later, after I had had my surgery, I was in the bathroom. And at this point, our lunches had grown to like 7 women. So we're in the bathroom and I'm topless. Mm-hmm. I have my boobs out and there's 7 women staring at them and feeling them. And this little old Asian lady walks in the bathroom just to wash her hands. And she sees this going on and she was like, oh my God, and like runs out. And so then after I put my shirt on, I walk out and I see this table of like 10 people who are her family members apparently. And they're all just looking at me like, oh my God, I don't know what is wrong with that woman, but she just had her tits out in the bathroom. but like funny things like that,
yeah.
we allowed ourselves to have, but then we also allowed ourselves to have the really dark days.
Yeah.
And when people who have not been through that try to say, oh, you got to have spirit. You got to find the humor. You got to yeah. have light. You know what? I don't have to this moment. Mm-hmm. I don't have to every moment in the day, you know? And if I'm in a mood where I want to find the lightness, great. Play along with that. If I'm in a mood where I want to find the darkness, play along with that. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you don't need, sometimes like if you just have maybe 5 minutes, I mean, if you just have a really good cry, we all know those really good
oh, yeah.
cries.
I know them well.
They're like orgasms. You just go, whoa, I didn't even know that I needed that, but I feel like a new woman right now. And sometimes you just need 5 minutes to go, man, this is bullshit. And I am so mad and I don't have time for this. And this is not what was supposed to happen. And that you're, and I still have those moments.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the misconceptions about cancer treatment also is that the worst part is chemo. Looking back on it, I think chemo is actually physically the hardest, but emotionally and mentally the best because everyone's giving you attention. Mm-hmm. Everyone feels sorry for you. Nobody expects you to return a phone call or an email. Nobody expects you to go to work. You can stay in bed all day and do nothing. And you're really just following direction. It's after that. It's after you finish chemo and surgery and radiation when everybody's like, oh, great, you're okay now. So can you respond to this email? Okay, what do you think about this? I need you back on this project. And did you get that package? Because I never got a thank you note from you. And I think that's kind of rude. And like all that stuff. And then that's when the actual PTSD sets in. And I'm bringing this up for a reason because I said, oh my God, I don't have PTSD. I actually said to my therapist when she kept saying you have PTSD, I was like, no, I don't. I said, like, I wasn't in war. I'm not a soldier. And it's not like I was in a tsunami clinging to a palm tree for survival. And she goes, but weren't you in a tsunami just like clinging to a palm tree for survival? And I went, oh yeah, I guess I was. Mm-hmm. And I took this like PTSD test and I like was shaking and crying and losing my shit like before I even got to question 5. And I hear this so often, especially with the Me Too movement. A lot of women talk about PTSD as it relates to their sexual trauma. And people are so quick to be like, oh, please, like, you weren't in war. You're not a soldier. Blah, blah, blah. And I really want us to stop thinking that PTSD is exclusive for the military. And I right. say this all with all respect for military. My father, 21-year military career, he was an officer in the Air Force. We lived in Korea, we lived in Nebraska, we lived in Louisiana. I am an Air Force brat. My mom was in the Air Force. Both my grandfathers fought in World War II. Like, I am a military family member. So this is no disrespect to the military, but PTSD is... it stands for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Nowhere in there is that exclusively for veterans, exclusively for soldiers, exclusively for military members. So people that have gone through something, whether it's cancer or whether it's, what's that thing that women have after they have a baby?
Postpartum.
Postpartum. Yes. Like that, there are so many things that cause trauma to ourselves, abusive relationships that we don't even realize, oh my God, was I in that? Until it's over and then we're processing it. So during that time, you know, I find that for me, finding a way to communicate with my partner and finding the humor with him, that was really important. But then also finding peers who knew what I was going through. Mm. And that's also how Kappa Kappa Cancer got started.
Yeah.
Was because I was like, if I was living in Ohio and I didn't, or no, actually the Cleveland Clinic is really actually pretty great. So I probably would have made some breasties there. If I was living in some random ass city and I didn't know a lot of young women specifically that had breast cancer, then it would really be really hard, you know? So, because people would be like, oh my God, my grandmother had cancer. I'm like, fuck your grandma. Can I say fuck on here?
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah. No offense to grandmas either. I'm offending everyone on this show. But, you know, I was like, I'm not anybody's grandma. I'm not even anybody's ma. I would love to be a grandma one day. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. So can you like not compare me to your grandma who was not in the prime of her career and who probably has like 30 friends who have cancer? Because I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
So finding that group of friends that can, I mean, it's the same reason why you have mommy and me groups, mm-hmm. because you want women who understand what's like to have your vag not properly healed yet. And, you know, all the things that go on with that. I mean, I've had women say to me, oh my God, I thought I was the only one that got a dry vagina from chemo. And I'm like, girl, join the club, you know? And so it's nice to be able to share those things.
Yeah.
And we definitely have a lot of dry vagina jokes. We did a 5K and we really wanted to name our team the Dry Vaginas. And Suzanne was like, no. I'm like, you're way too prissy for me.
That's amazing. And I think that's like a good lesson for anybody who's listening to this, regardless of what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And sort of a summation of what you've been saying is, you know, allow yourself to feel.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to feel these emotions. We've talked about this a lot on the show. Like if you start judging your emotions or start trying to avoid them, they're only going to come back stronger and more, you know, hit harder the next time, right?
Yes.
You're just like stifling it down. Let yourself feel those emotions. Find the humor, you know, where you can.
Yeah.
And also like make yourself vulnerable. Talk to other people about what you're going through because like you said, chances are like they're dealing with something very similar. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in your case, like at first, like but maybe before you got diagnosed with cancer, talking about a dry vagina may have been something that you're not like, oh yeah, this is a perfect lunch topic.
Right.
This is what I will talk about today. Yeah. You know what I mean? But then once you do bring that up, I mean, think about how many women you're probably helping with your podcast who didn't know that was normal and who now feel that sense of community and feel that embrace. So I do think that so much of that is important. I think that's a great lesson that a lot of our listeners can take away no matter what they're going through, right?
Yeah. And the reality is that, you know, I also, what I noticed was I developed so much more empathy when I went through this. Because people go, oh, I don't want to complain about this because, you know, you have cancer. And I go, no. Like, yeah, I have cancer, but there's people starving in other countries. Like no matter how bad your situation is, there's always someone that's got it 25,000 times worse. So I would go, no. Tell me about your experience. Mm. And what I realized is that on any given day, everyone is going through something.
Absolutely.
And what I also realized is that people were so nice to me. I was at Starbucks this one time and I used to wear a lot of beanies because I was going through chemo when it was winter in LA at the frigid temperature of 55. And, but also you probably don't know this because I don't know if you've ever been, have you ever been bald?
I have not. When I was born, I guess.
I highly recommend it. Okay. Highly recommend it. And definitely have someone shave your head. I was so like Natalie Portman in V for Vendetta, or I mean, I actually have Ripley tattooed on my side. I named my boobs Ripley and Sarah for Ripley from Alien and Sarah from the Terminator.
That's amazing.
That's what I named my boobs. Anyway, I felt very like Sigourney Weaver in Alien when I got my head shaved. Your head gets really cold.
Yeah, I bet.
It's so cold. So I wore beanies all the time and I was at Starbucks and this guy was being a total dick. Like the line wasn't curved the right way or something. He was just being a dick for no reason. And we kind of got into it. And then he ordered his drink and then I ordered my drink and I was waiting and I was having a hot flash, which you have when you're on chemo. And I took my beanie off and I saw out of the corner of my eye, I saw him look at me and realize, oh my God, that girl has cancer. And I was just yelling at her in a Starbucks about the way the line was curved. And I could tell that he felt like shit.
Yeah.
And so he apologized and da da da. And he was like, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 this whole thing. And I was like, wow, what if we all walked through the world as if the person that we are being a dick to was going through something really shitty?
Everybody is.
Yeah.
You should treat everybody like they are going through shit because Everybody single person is. Yes, that's a really, really good point. You should not have to like learn somebody has cancer and then have to apologize later. Right. Just from the outset, be a good human. It's super simple.
I tell my husband this every time we go to like Kinko's or the DMV or the post office, because those are apparently the three worst places on the planet to work, because every person I've ever met who works at the post office, the DMV or Kinko's for some reason is having the worst day ever.
The people that come in there and the way they treat them.
Yeah. Exactly. So Tom is like, I don't know what that person's problem. And I go, Tom, you have no idea what that person is going through right now. Give them love, give them empathy, give them a smile. You know, make eye contact, because most people don't. Mm-hmm. And if you just stop, when you're checking out at the grocery store, if you just stop and make eye contact with the person that's checking you out and smile and say, how's your day?
Yeah.
How's your day going? That is so different from what, and here's my stat, 98% of the people on the planet are going to do.
There you go.
I can't back that up with any facts.
No, I think that's such a great point. And I do think that, it doesn't always have to be verbal. I have made a practice of when I walk by strangers, just wishing love and abundance on them. Oh, I just look at them and I just, you know, I'm like, I hope that you live a happy and abundant life full of love. And just like doing that, like there's a transfer of energy there. And
totally,
you know, whether they know it or not, or you know it or not, that is something that is so, so powerful.
Yeah.
Just like this podcast has been. I think this podcast has been really powerful and I'm so appreciative of you sharing your story with our listeners. And I think they're really going to benefit from this. Before you go, I want you to answer 5 rapid fire questions that you can answer with one word, a phrase, whatever works for you. But what is one thing you couldn't live without?
My husband, Tom.
Oh, that's sweet.
I mean that genuinely. Like, I don't mean that to be sappy, but like we went through fire our first year of marriage. And like, I don't think that we're stronger because of cancer, but I think that cancer showed us how strong we were.
Wow. That is powerful. What drives you?
Sorry. You know what, Hannah? I didn't actually look at all the questions. I looked at the first one and that's why I knew the answer right away. What drives me? What does drive me? I'm sorry.
No,
let's go back to that.
No pressure. Yeah. What drives you?
Oh, we're doing that again.
Yeah, did you want to do it again? Oh, you want to go back?
I meant let's go back. Let's go on and let's go back to.
Okay.
I thought
you wanted me to edit that out.
Okay, yes, I do. No.
Okay, we can come back.
Hold on.
Yeah, take your time.
Okay, all right, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. What drives you?
A desire to leave a legacy.
Ooh.
I want to leave something behind.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just my podcast. Maybe it's Maybe it's a kid. Maybe it's my acting work. Maybe it's a book. Maybe it's I don't know.
I think you sharing your story in the way that you are doing it so honestly and so vulnerably is doing that.
Thank you.
What keeps you positive?
Humor.
Yeah, I love that.
And darkness.
Ooh.
The humor and the darkness. I like the yin and the yang.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Yeah.
What or who inspires you?
Ava DuVernay.
Mm.
I actually have an avocado tree named after her. And every morning I
love that you name everything.
I do. And you know what? I have a song that I sing to her every morning. I go, Ava, pretty Ava, the beautiful avocado tree, pretty Ava, pretty Ava. Look how beautiful you're gonna be. I can't sing, but that's okay. That's my avocado song. And you know what? She is, and I grew her from a tiny little avocado pit that I got out of an avocado that I ate. And I met Ava DuVernay.
Did you tell her?
I told her, and she was crying and I was crying. And then she gave me an Oprah hug. And I was like, this is everything I want in my life.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Here's my scientific fact. They did a study actually of two different plants, and one people said like sang to, said nice things to, complimented, and the other one was like heard audio of like, you suck, you're never gonna be anything, whatever. And it's insane because the one that got the compliments grew and flourished, and the other one was like brown and just, you know, dying. Yeah. And it is. If it happens with plants, it happens with people.
It happens with pets.
It happens with everything.
Yes, that energy. No, and every day I come to her and if I notice that she has a new leaf, I go, oh, Ava, that's a new leaf. Look at that new leaf that's growing out. Oh, look how beautiful you are. And then I tell the cats to compliment her. I tell the cats to compliment the dog. I tell the dog to compliment the cats.
Yeah.
You know, I tell them all.
That is beautiful. That's the way that I do it. Every morning I start my day by complimenting all the things on my dog. I'm like, look how beautiful your belly is.
That's
wonderful. Look at your paws. Well, I get what you're saying.
But it's also, you know, one of the things like Tom and I are working on right now, because we do want to have children in some way that they end up coming into our lives. We will be parents because we know we'd be awesome parents. And one of the things that we're working on is our own self-doubt and our own self-deprecation. Because I said, listen, in the same way that like, of course, a young girl who watches her mom squeeze her belly rolls and go, oh my God, I'm so fat. Oh my God, I can't have that. And in the same way, that girl's going to grow up with eating issues.
Totally.
The same way that a boy who grows up watching his father have doubts about his career and doubts about, you know, his whatever,
it's going to do the same thing, right?
We have to watch. We can't just say, hey, you're beautiful. We also have to say, I'm beautiful.
Yeah. I'm going to start my morning like that. Look in the mirror and be like, I love my belly.
Yes.
I love my paws.
Tom tells me my belly, he calls it frog face, because no matter how much I gain or like, even when I had C. diff, even when I lost all the weight and I was like a waif just floating across the room, I always have this like donut of belly fat around my belly button. So you can see it. And I squeeze it and it looks like a frog face, like Kermit. And he's like, show me the frog face. And I'll squeeze my belly fat. And he's like, froggy, froggy, froggy. And then he'll come over and he'll shake it. And I'm like, you know what? You're still going to fuck me. So you can shake my frog face all you want because you're still going to fuck me. I'm not worried about that at all.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Okay, last question is, what is your intention? It can be for today, tomorrow, or your lifetime.
My intention is to leave everything... My intention is to leave every space that I enter better than when I found it.
I love that. Thank you so much, Erin. This has been such a pleasure. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Erin L. Cummings. On Facebook, it's Erin Cummings, official Erin Cummings, something like that. I'm on Facebook.
And then they can listen to your podcast.
Yes. You can go to download the CastBox app or anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to Kappa Kappa Cancer, Your Guide to the Sorority You Never Wanted to Join, hosted by Cancer Warrior and Sorority Reject, because I was rejected by the Chi Omegas, Erin Cummings.
I love that. And as always, you guys can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Hannah Cranston. Also, please, please, please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. Also, if you have a minute, do me a favor and leave a review or a rating. It is so, so important for the livelihood of the podcast and also myself. So please, please do. It means so much to me. And just a reminder, we'll be coming at you every Wednesday. So buckle up because it's going to be too much to handle. See you next week.